Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us. This is Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theatre. I have a really good sport on with me today, somebody I've rescheduled three times now, and that's Peggy Taporn. Peggy, thank you for being here.
Absolutely. It's beautiful in your brand new studio. It's my first time visiting.
Yes, our closet that you can peer into, right next to the Arts Council. I apologize for that opening moment there, but I can actually hear myself in the headset.
Excellent.
Now. Excellent. It just needed a bump. These puddle jumpers always do. Anyway, again, thank you for joining us. I want to acknowledge my sponsor, the Apex Arts Council, and President Bob Crowley of that particular genre. At some point, we'll have him back on. But what we're going to do today is explore all things Temple Theater. I just want to announce that some redneck buddies have invited me to go drag racing, and I'm thinking about trying it.
Woohoo!
It's actually
not at the Temple Theater.
It's actually a race to determine how fast you can run in women's clothing.
See, that sounds like
you weren't
drag
ready for
race.
That, were you?
Exactly.
Right.
You said your program is the longest running show, and what went through my mind was if you've been running that long, you should have gotten there by now, don't you think?
I know. But it's the motion. It's the perpetual motion.
Keep moving, like a shark. That's
actually, Rocco really needs to take credit for having the longest running show here. You've had, how long has yours been running now? 7 years at least?
I believe, Claudio, we're coming up on 8 years now.
Goodness, yeah.
So I think I'm up to 420, something like that.
Shows. Wow. So I'm humble pie. Mine's only 3 years.
Well, congratulations to you both.
Thank you.
I appreciate what you do. There's not enough
it's
of that.
Wonderful to be appreciated.
Exactly.
And I've been a little absent of late because I've been having car trouble, and I live 50 miles away, so it's not easy to hitchhike and get here. So my apologies for the
people don't hitchhike anymore. It's a dying art, I think.
And nobody picks you up anymore either.
That's right. You can try.
So, yes, exactly.
Now it's just called walking.
Yes, yep. Indeed. Mm-hmm. It's exercise.
That's right.
So, hey, tune us into what's going on, first of all, in your life. And I thought we'd sort of explore all avenues of theater as well as catch people up with what's going on at Temple Theater in general.
Absolutely. Well, we're having an interesting year. We're calling it our season of silver linings. And so far, that's sort of what it is coming. You know, we were hoping to see a little more light at the end of this economic dark.
I'm not seeing
long
much of that myself.
Tunnel,
right.
Yes. But thus far, that we're still. We're doing what we need to do to survive. We're not, you know, raking in the dough or by any means.
But you're staying afloat.
But we're staying afloat,
which is considered success in the arts.
Exactly.
So.
We had two wonderful shows that opened the season. Sweet Charity was a wonderful artistic success. My friend Jacob Toth, who is a Fosse protege, he literally studied with Gwen Verdon, and you don't get closer to the horse's mouth than that.
I wouldn't think so.
So he came down and shared his talents and his skills with the wonderful people of North Carolina, and it's one of the highlights, I think, of my career is watching him work with these, you know, North Carolina natives for the most part, and giving them this wisdom and this skill set, because doing Fosse dance is like speaking a foreign language, really.
Oh my God, yeah.
And you have to learn it from someone who's done it. It's a tradition that is passed down.
And to have him do it in the theater you're running, that's
right.
Be the
that was
of
really
cool.
Exciting, and exciting for the audience. And then we followed that with the wonderful play, The 39 Steps.
Yes, which I missed.
Which you missed, but it was again, the cast was stellar. We had Betsy Henderson, who's a big, wonderful actress. Well, she's not a big actress. She's a very small actress, but has a big career in Raleigh. And
big as in reputation.
Big as in reputation, exactly. Tom Dalton, who, you know, don't tell him I said this because he's an employee as well, but I think he's one of the best actors in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had a new guy who's still in school at UNCG. And rounding out the cast was Steve Moore, who, again, from Greensboro, who's a wonderful actor. So we've had some great talent this year. I'm really proud of the artistic success we've had. And now we're doing our big cash cow, which everyone loves, and myself included, our musical adaptation of A Christmas Carol, which
indeed
is 43 people in the cast. 22 of them are local youth, but by local I mean from five different counties.
Okay.
I think that's the neat appeal of the Temple Theater is that we bring in our talent from across North Carolina. We bring in our audience from literally seven different counties in North Carolina.
I can see that, including right here.
Including right here. In fact, Carrboro Chapel Hill is our biggest growing subscription base these days.
Well, I hope the speakeasies had something to do with that.
I think so. I think so. And thank you for having me. So, it's, you know, we're kicking along. It's it's an interesting year
for
all of us, I believe.
I remember you going through some really hard times a while back. So the fact that you've still got that place staying afloat speaks volumes for you.
Well, and this year we took the plunge. We've been soliciting funds for our flush fund since I got here.
Is that what I'm assuming?
Yes. Yeah, okay. And this year, you know, we were either, you know, it's time to make something happen.
What is the word on the little theater?
The Black Box.
The Black Box, yeah.
Well, we now have our $250,000 restroom concession lounge facility, which is quite beautiful. So, you know, the challenge used to be to get people in and out in a reasonable time at intermission.
Mm-hmm.
Now the challenge is to get them back into the theater because it's nice over there. So you have to come and visit. It's
so
brand new. We
so
opened it during 39 steps.
How does that time with the Black Box?
Well, the Black Box now has access to our concession lounge restrooms.
Okay.
Unfortunately, we need probably another $250,000 to open that up.
I was going
to
say, it's not open yet.
And it is not open yet, but we'll get there.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know, I have plans. My grand scheme is to sort of take over the whole block and become the Barter Theater and become a destination in North Carolina. Huh. You know, I tell people Stanford's a wonderful location because it is centrally located, but we don't
That's
have
true.
The beach. We don't have the mountains. What we have are wonderful artists like yourself
who
sell their wares and their talent. And we have wonderful potters. We have wonderful mixed media
That's
artists.
That's really true. It's...
And we have, you know, Heart of Carolina Jazz Orchestra is based in Stanford and the Temple Theater. So we need to sell what we've got, which is our creative talent, our artistic spirit.
I agree.
You know, some people are like, wasn't that kind of an oxymoron, artistic spirit in Stanford? I was like, well, until you're there, it does sound kind of silly. But to see this beautiful 1925 vaudeville gem plunk down, in the middle of Sanford, I think is kind of a miracle. So we
almost,
need to keep that miracle alive.
Almost like a smaller version. I was about
you said
to say
virgin.
Wait a minute.
And you were looking right at me. So.
Sorry, honey. It's like historically like a smaller version of the Carolina Theater in Durham. The historic,
that's right.
Because both were vaudeville houses at one time. So.
That's right. And the original tin ceiling, the acoustics, you've performed there,
yeah.
Are just wonderful. And that's why, you know, we get people like Jen Chapin and Maureen McGovern and, you know, Stanley Jordan, who loved to play in that space.
You just reminded me. I need to call Jen because I've done two interviews on telephone with her since you connected us. But it's time to have her on again. I wanted to get up with her to do an interview about her father, about Harry Chapin.
Yes.
And, you know, play both their music. But
right. We
really haven't spoken about him so far. And I didn't know whether it was a tender issue. So I avoided it because she never volunteered.
Right. I don't think it's not taboo, but it's not the first thing she wants to talk about, obviously.
We're talking about
Harry
Chapin.
We're talking about Harry Chapin, who obviously had a wonderful career.
Yes.
And, you know, I think Jen is such an artist in her own right.
Mm-hmm.
That she, you know, wants to sort of enter on that skill and
she,
talent.
Yeah,
and
she wants to be seen for herself,
she wants
which
to be
I
seen
can
for herself.
Fully appreciate. But when I communicated with her last, she did seem more open to talking about her father. And the reason I did that is because he'd just gotten some big exposure in the media for, I think, donations that he'd given for children and a lot that he's done for New York City. And what her and I discovered we had in common was that when I lived in Brooklyn Heights, when I moved from 96 and Broadway to Brooklyn Heights, right by the promenade, I was literally living on the block that she was raised on.
You're kidding.
No kidding. And I remember
seeing
the plaque to her father from her father dedicating it to a school there. It was the Harry Chapin so-so.
Right.
And it was right next to the park where I used to go take my dogs to do their business.
Well, that area, like
in
most
Brooklyn
of New
Heights.
York, has changed.
Oh, I'm sure.
It's every time I go back. I was recently back in October, and, you know, I lived there for almost 23 years.
Yeah.
And I've been gone about 5.5 years, and it's very different. Times Square is different. You know, when I first moved there in the 80s, you know, literally from a Broadway show I was doing on 53rd Street, I would run to Port Authority, literally run. Because it was a little dangerous back in the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
no
now
doubt.
it's like Tokyo Disneyland.
Yeah.
The neon and the 3D moving, you know, HD billboards. It looks like a large Asian city used to look.
Interesting.
It's just very
and
different.
How would you say that applies to Brooklyn?
Brooklyn is just gentrified. No artist can live in Brooklyn anymore. Unfortunately, they priced us out.
No more bohemia.
It's the whiff of bohemia, but with a lot of money behind it. So,
yeah,
you know, the poor starving artists have keep moving further and further out, like in most places.
I was on the corner of Hicks and Cranberry, which is in walking distance from the Brooklyn Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a great place to be. And I put myself to task one day. I decided to walk all the way to 106th and Broadway from Brooklyn. Didn't take the subway. Walked across the Brooklyn Bridge. I can say I've crossed that bridge.
Yes,
and
it's
fun. It was amazing. Yeah, every place I walked through, I'd stop off and check it out. And got to work about half an hour late, but still,
it
was
worth
it.
But you made it.
Absolutely,
Peggy. I haven't been in Times Square, New York, in years. Mm-hmm. How would you say it compares to what it used to be when you first went to New York?
It's completely different. It's totally different. And really, this last time, because I go every year, I try to go every year, I was just taken aback a little bit by the technology. It really looked like Tokyo looked when I last visited there about 6 years ago. You know, the three-story moving billboards
and lights
and so much information. And now the Times Square area where they have the TKTS, the discount ticket area, is now a pedestrian mall. So there are no cars allowed.
Interesting.
In a two-block area. Huh. And there are little chairs out on the street. It's just very different. They have like a big sort of platforms with seating where you can sit and look at the you know, building where the ball drops on New Year's Eve.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All of that looking towards that building is now pedestrian mall with big, you know, seating, grandstand seating, and the TKTS booth, and all these giant moving billboards, and, you know.
Sounds like the whole damn place has gone digital.
It has gone digital.
It's a Bradbury novel.
You know, and they have these interactive billboards where, you know, text blah, 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 and make the clown, you know, hit the bullseye and the clown will fall in the water.
Oh, my God.
I mean, but people are just sitting there now being entertained.
That's what the society's hooked on now.
That's right. That's right. No wonder they don't want to go see, you know, grandmas like me going, you know. But I keep telling the kids that we are in 4D, so it's worth coming to the Temple Theater.
That's right. There we
Not only 3D, but live.
And we can even step down and smack you.
That's right.
Boom. So, hey, how about some tunes? We got some jazz-oriented Christmas tunes.
We do, Cloud.
I mean, there's plenty of music going on here with Peggy, but I figured we'd break it up a little.
Have a little musical break. WCOM Community Radio is made possible by our underwriters, contributors, and volunteers. We are your voice in our community. Your time is important. Take us along. We're WCOM Community Radio for Chapel Hill and Carrboro. Now Claudio's holiday, Crown of Thorns.
Good morning from WQDR Raleigh. This morning we present something a little bit different for us, an original narrative reading and composing from the poet Claudio, and now the Crown of Thorns.
The morning breaks with frosty glow as a man walks silent by the sea. And in his heart, the memories flow of when he died for you and me. So as he walks, he sees a child playing in the sand. And to the infant young and wild, he reaches out his hand. He speaks to him in words of love, and not those of confusion, of where the people far above live not in false illusion. And then he speaks of how it could be here forevermore. Says for this miracle to happen, we must open every door. The young child then, in verge of tears, touches him on the shoulder, and relating to him his many fears, says, I'll get there when I'm older. The man responds, my child, my son, live but in love forever. And I'll prepare for you a place in the land of never, never. Then slowly rising, he leaves the sun to his playing in the sand. And in reflections of the sun come visions of his hand. The visions linger like the nightly stars as the child discerns the healing scars. Then bowing low to morning skies, he kneels into the sand. And first he whispers, then he cries for help to understand. And as lessons after many years, make every child a man. He soon defeats his many fears and strives to understand. Then soon for him, a son is born by strong and loving wife. The birth takes place one frosty morn as the gift of love is life. And as many, many years go by, and seasons bid their change, some will live and some will die for life to rearrange. So the father is buried by the sun, one bright and wondrous day. And when the work was all but done, I heard the youngster say. He spoke of people who worshipped kings and other all such foolish things. And one day crying, he spoke to me of his encounter by the sea. And through his tears, I still hear him say, live in love for every day. And should you live yet a thousand morns, remember well the Crown of Thorns.
And that was, God, that was recorded back in 1976. I can't believe it. Much younger man. I was in my 20s back then.
You sounded very... Remember, bravado.
I told you, the voice sounds almost older than I sound now, so I have no idea what those studio guys were doing.
But it sounded good, Cloudy.
But I was opening for Mike Cross at the time. Did a lot of show openings for my dear friend, whom I'm going to drag kicking and screaming onto this show at some point. So, Cindy, if you're listening, help. Bring Patrick, too. that brings back some memories. I wanted to just give a personal Christmas dedication this year.
Well, that's a wonderful gift.
Thank you. So it's back to Peggy.
Back to me.
Back to you, yes. Well, she's dancing on the tabletop, but she'll come down and grab the mic in just a second.
Exactly. But you can't see it.
Yeah, right.
No, I love this time of year. I love being able to share Christmas Carol with people because I think people know the story, obviously. Most of us do.
Indeed.
But my favorite part of this experience is that we do student matinees every Friday morning at 9:30 in the morning. And we pack the place.
That's ambitious.
It's quite early.
And you pack the place that early?
We pack the place, yes.
That's impressive, too.
Buses start pulling up at about 8:45, and we load the kids in. And many of them have not been in a theater before, so they think they're seeing a movie.
Huh.
So it's very interesting to watch them watch the play. You know?
So is this actually schools?
Yeah, they're schools.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
But they come from Moore County, from the Fayetteville area. We had a school from Chapel Hill this past week.
Nice.
And it really, it's a wonderful experience, and I think they get it, you know, that because they listen much more intently than the adults who think they know the story and think they've seen this before.
I can imagine
for a kid, it's unfolding new.
Yeah, they're a little awestruck because it's not on film.
That's right. And we have, you know, Jacob Marley comes out and he's in chains and it's a big guy and smoke and lightning and thunder. And I think it's exciting. It's exciting for me. That is what puts me in the holiday spirit, is watching these kids get caught up in the story.
And that's what it's all about, really. It's for the children.
Exactly.
It's not for us.
Well, it's for the child in us.
In us, exactly. There
you go. And so that helps me bring her back out. And then we do a talk back, and it's fascinating what their questions are.
Hmm.
You know, and this past week we had younger kids. The first week, we're in our third week of performances. It only runs through this Sunday, so you have Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday to come and see this wonderful production. But we did a talk back the first week, and they were middle school, high school kids.
Right.
And so they had questions like, how much do you get paid? Where's the cute ghost from? You know, that kind of questions. But this year, we had first, second, third graders.
Mm-hmm.
And they had such interesting questions like, how did you build the props?
Interesting.
Do you think that they even
thought
about that? And our Tiny Tim, I don't want to give anything away, but there's always a question whether Tiny Tim is played by a boy or a girl. So that's always one of their big questions. And where do how old are the kids, and how to get involved, and who sewed all the costumes, and just really interesting things. That
stuff that actually I didn't
expect. Yeah. You know, and how we have a giant 20-foot puppet big. It's based on the Mexican Day of the Dead.
All right, yes,
masks and
got
faces,
you.
But he's the ghost of Christmas yet to come, and so when he comes out in all his glory, and we actually call him Buganji, because he's this giant puppet,
like that,
marionette more than a puppet. And so the kids had questions about how was he made, and how did his arms move, and where did the smoke come from, and just they were interested.
That's interesting, the fact that they would look at the technical aspect,
right,
and not just the fantasy,
and not just the exactly. Yeah. So. It was fun, and that's what really gets me in the holiday spirit.
Out of the mouths of babes.
That's right.
It is amazing what can sometimes come out of
exactly.
there.
Exactly. And they all had questions about, you know, why were the Cratchits so poor? Well, that's a good question.
Blame Dickens.
Exactly. You know, so we actually talked about they're poor people today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are people, because he says that, you know, Scrooge says it looks like they live in an outhouse, you know, and so they were saying, well, that's kind of mean. I said, well, but then the Ghost of Christmas Present said that's all that they could afford.
Right.
And so did you notice that they were some of the happiest people in this play just happened to be some of the poorest people in this play. And so that Christmas is not about, you know, who got an iPad, but it's about time you spend with your family and the gifts that you give and what they mean. And
mm-hmm.
so. It was kind of a deep talk back for first, second, and third graders, you know. But that's
the place to plant the seed, because then they can do something when they get older. You can say, the poor people are right here. We just ignore them.
That's right.
We've got to get better about that.
That's right.
So on.
And that's the lesson that Scrooge has. You know,
throughout
the play, he keeps saying, "I wish I would have. You know, I wish I were nicer to my clerk, Bob Cratchit. I wish I would have given the little boy Christmas caroling outside my door something." So he learns, mm-hmm. as we all learn every year, once a year. Hopefully, to kind of open our hearts and be a little more generous, and I think that's what this time of year means to me. It's the one time of year where you need to take a breath and open your eyes and look around and say, it's not about, you know, Black Friday shopping to get everything checked off your list. It's about every day, you know, trying to take the blackness out of your heart.
And, that's true. That
and
is
fill it.
That is the one good thing, because I'm really turned off to the commercial aspect. But the very point that you just made, and maybe that's my gift this year, because I've been really turned off to the whole idea this year. But I'm Scrooge this year. But the whole idea of this is the one time that we sort of have to look at our morals, and that truly is the gift.
Right. And I think it's not by accident that all of the major religions' holidays fall at the same time. You know, the winter solstice,
right?
Kwanzaa, Hanukkah, Christmas. I mean, there's a reason that we take this sort of dead time of winter to look inside. It used to be because you couldn't go outside because it was cold and freezing. Well, now we can go anywhere, anytime, you know. But it's still the time of year where you can reflect. So hopefully, you know, thank you for sharing your Christmas gift with us. And hopefully people will come to the Temple Theater, not, you know, because it's a holiday tradition, even though it is a holiday tradition, but to sort of revisit why we celebrate this time of year and why Dickens' story is a classic. People are like, why would you do this every year? Because classics are classics for a reason. Yeah. I've seen the show now for 4 years, every show, and every time I still get something out of it.
And look at Ira David Wood. I mean, he's made a legend.
I still root for Tiny Tim. I still root for Scrooge.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Every time, because, you know, that's kind of how life is. You don't know at the beginning of the day what the end of the day is going to be.
Now, you yourself don't take any part in it, though.
I direct it. I choreograph it.
Well, yes.
And I do all the costumes. So
You're just not, make no appearance.
I'm just not in it.
Yes.
But the spirit of Peggy is sprinkled throughout.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I understand.
Yeah. And it's fun.
I know it's a heck of a lot of work. How long does it take you before you actually start running the show? 2 or 3 weeks or longer?
We rehearse for 2.5 weeks.
Okay.
I start working on the costumes in July, which is why right after our season auditions, which happen in July, I cast the show as much as I can, including the 22 youth and the 21 adults, and so that I can start working on the costumes because, of course, they're Victorian.
True. Now, do you have a costumier or do you yourself work
on them? I myself work on them.
My goodness, a female McElvey.
Exactly. And then I obviously can't do it all myself, so I bring in wonderful volunteers who are much better seamsters than I am. And we alter things and
These are obviously professionals
and help. So that's one of the things I'm the most proud of. You know, it snows on stage. We have this beautiful marionette. Well, it's kind of creepy. A creepy marionette and the 380 costume pieces that, you know.
And where do they go afterwards?
We store them.
Good.
Yep. So now we have quite a collection of
Dickensian costumes. So you won't have to build them again next year.
Every year, because we're humans and it's live theater, this year about
sizes, shapes
are different
and so
on. Is new. So some of the things that we've used in the past, we didn't get to use this year. That, like, my favorite dress that was built by a friend of mine who has moved away, who was a wonderful costume designer, builder, sewer, seamstress. We didn't get to use this year because nobody fit it. So it's always new, and that's what makes it fresh for me. You know, this year we started a youth choir, which we've never had before. So the kids are singing for a half an hour in our brand new concession lounge prior to every show. So that's kind of fun, and it's good for them because they get more to do, and it gets them out of backstage for the hour before the show, which the adults appreciate. So
I'm sure.
It's a win-win situation.
There's a separation there. Well, let's take this as a launching point to sort of jump off into your own life just a little bit. For those folks tuning us in that are hearing you on my show for the first time, even though you've been on at least half a dozen times or more.
And thank you for having me back.
You're part of the family, so it's expected. I didn't expect to change times on you 3 times, so I apologize profusely.
That's all right. My middle name is Go With The Flow.
Right, mine too. Mine is Get Out Of The River once in a while. But cue us into who is Peggy Taphorn. I know you started your career goes back to your time in Broadway. That you're literally a Broadway seasoned actress, singer, and whatever else it takes. So
yeah, I was one of the lucky ones. I was telling Rocco that I grew up in Illinois, near St. Louis. So
Ray Bradbury country.
That's right. And August, you know, tons of writers and music, and I think the best barbecue. Although I'm not allowed to say that in North Carolina.
Well, wasn't there a line at one time that says, if it plays in Peoria, it plays?
That's right.
There we go.
Exactly.
Where did that originate from? Can you cue us in on that?
You know, I don't know, but they used to do the circuit, you know, going prior to Broadway shows.
So it was a measuring stick.
Right, for out-of-town tryouts, and Peoria was one of the stops.
Right.
And I think it's because Midwesterners are sort of famous for our honesty and our bluntness, And so,
and support for the arts.
And support for the arts. But if you can, you know, get through to a Midwesterner and make them laugh and cry and experience something, then you can pretty much do that anywhere. So,
just to interrupt for a moment, when I'm still looking at some point to find a place in Montana. I'd like my 20 acres in the middle of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember when I first started asking for information, you know, with the town council and so on, as to what it would be like to live in different places. One of the guys responded by saying, he says, well, everybody's very supportive of the arts, but they have at least two guns. So I guess the arts are enforced. I don't know what he was trying to tell me.
That's interesting. Maybe you're forced to go to the arts.
There
so maybe
go.
You should try
Peggy,
that.
Peggy, let me ask you, when was the first time you ever came to Carrboro?
It's probably my first season here, don't you think? So that was 2007.
I would say with when I had you on the radio.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
2007. Well, how would you say Carrboro has changed since you first arrived here and then now you're here?
Well, the radio station's moved three times, so
that's right.
It's obviously changed quite a bit.
And we no longer have the outhouse, I'm sorry to say.
That's exactly.
Ira David Wood and I took some pictures in it together.
I miss the outhouse. No, I don't.
Yes. Not using it.
Yeah,
the image.
Exactly. I think Carrboro has changed in wonderful ways. You know, I've seen it become even more sort of an enclave for artistry and creativity. I know that there are new restaurants here that I have visited. The one across the street, I don't think was here the first time I came.
True, it's changed. Yeah.
Right. So I think it's like all of our little pockets, as I call them, of creativity in North Carolina. I think it's continued to sort of define itself. And this new, brand new art center is a wonderful example of that. I hope to get up here to see a play very soon.
Well, the art center itself has been here for a while, but the fact that we are now a radio station connected to it is the new deal.
Uh-huh.
I don't know, how old would you say the art center is?
The art center goes back to the late 1960s.
Really? Does it? Okay.
Really? Well,
I didn't realize it was that far.
They have done a big marketing campaign because all of a sudden I'm getting all kinds of marketing from them. So good for the artistic director.
Well, let's go back to your life.
So let's go back to my life.
Back to Peoria or where we were before.
I grew up in Belleville, Illinois. I'm the fourth of five.
Mm-hmm.
So I tell people that's why I went into theater, to just get a little bit of attention.
I'm the fourth of five.
The fourth
of five. Not the seventh
of
seven.
No, the fourth of five. There's a boy on each end, and then there are three girls in the middle. Not a theatrical family. My dad ran an appliance store. My mother of the day was a mom and a housewife. We are very an eclectic family because we're all almost 5 years apart. So
that's good.
We're all very different of our generations. My oldest brother is an ichthyologist who is world renowned. He has discovered several fish and one snake. He lived in Venezuela for 32 years.
Interesting. Wow.
He is now back in Belleville taking care. Not taking care because my mom is fine, but living with my mother. When things went south, literally, in Venezuela, he fled the country basically with two suitcases after having lived there for 35 years. He was the mayor of his town at one point, and he literally ran for his life.
My God, yeah. So he was
several
a known
years
figure.
Ago. Yes. Then my
those
next,
little backyard revolutions.
That's right. My next oldest sister is a special ed teacher with six children of her own. So she is the one who's responsible for all my Christmas gifts heading out.
So
back.
She started out teaching the six and the class just grew. Is that what happened?
Exactly. My next sister is a physical therapist. And then there's me. And my little brother is a electrical engineer. So we're all very different.
Boy, you are different. Yeah.
So how do you
explain what became of you?
You know, my sisters started a dance studio. We all started dancing. My mom was very smart. When my sister was 15, I was 5, and she wanted to start taking dance classes, and so my mom said, if I'm taking one, I'm taking all of you. So literally all of us started dance classes. My little brother wasn't born yet, but I was 5. And then they started a dance studio when I was in 5th grade, and so I started teaching for them for a quarter an hour. I taught dance in the 5th grade.
Many moons ago.
Exactly, and then taught dance throughout high school until I went to Webster University Conservatory of the Arts. It was kind of a fluke. I was supposed to go to Washington University. I had a full ride scholarship to go into pre-law. And my choir teacher in high school, Mrs. Bringer, changed my life completely. And she was taking a couple kids to audition for Webster. It was an audition situation to get into the conservatory. And I was the only one that was accepted. And she basically said that, you know, you can always be a lawyer, but this is a very prestigious thing, and you got accepted, so why not give it a shot? At that time at Webster, they did a 2-year program, and then they had cuts. And then you were invited to stay the next 2 years. So I went to Webster, and my family was not very happy about that. But after the second year, our class went from 42 people. They did the cuts, and we went down to 12 people.
Wow.
So it was pretty serious. And then after graduating, I moved to New York, was one of the very lucky ones. My claim to fame is that I never had to have a day job, which I'm very proud of.
That is pretty extraordinary.
Did 6 Broadway shows, saw the world, did the first big Broadway musical in Hong Kong in China. It was actually in Macau, which is an island.
What was the musical?
Chicago.
Ah, Chicago in China. There
Chicago
we go.
In China. And that's kind of funny because my mom, when I told her that I was going to China with Chicago, told all of my relatives that I was coming to Chicago. So I had cousins emailing me from, you know, Illinois, all over the place, saying, when are you coming to Chicago? I was like, I'm not. I'm doing Chicago in China. What? So that was mass confusion for a while in my family.
Made in China proudly presents.
That's
Chicago.
Right. Exactly. Have played all across America, done quite a few national tours through North Carolina. And then, you know, after a while in New York, I call New York dog years. I loved it there. I loved my time there. I loved being part of the club, as it were, and my experience there. Mm-hmm. But it's a hard life.
I would have to agree with that.
I
having only
dog
spent
years.
A year to
exactly.
your 22, but I can see what you're talking about.
Right. And so a friend of mine was teaching at the School of the Arts here in North Carolina, and he interviewed for this job at the Temple Theater. And he immediately called me up after his first interview, and he's like, I don't think it's a job for me, but it's a wonderful location. There are, you know, half the town is relocated Yankees. Some of them from the Midwest,
yes.
which I am both of those things.
Right.
He's like, but it's a small town. I grew up in a small town. And he said, the thing about it is, though, is that it has this beautiful historic gem built in 1925, which you just don't find anymore anywhere
right.
in the United States. They've all been knocked down for parking lots.
That's usually what happens. That's
right.
what they tried with the Carolina and Durham.
Exactly. And he said they do mostly musicals, and they're looking for a real community leader who's willing to get in there and sort of transform. You know, at the time, this was before the economic crash, you know, we were all still building and hoping, and the mm-hmm. Renaissance was coming, and well, that all the kind of that got put on hold for a while. And so I was on the road with the Sweet Charity Tour starring Molly Ringwald.
Uh-huh. I finally met her.
Oh, did you?
She did a storytelling night at the Carolina.
Oh, good. Yeah. So I'm a little geographically challenged, and the tour was going to Greenville, South Carolina. And so in my little brain, I thought, oh, South Carolina, North Carolina, how far can it be? So it's far, by the way.
It's just a stretch, yeah.
Exactly. So I got to Greenville, rented a car, drove to Sanford, sort of fell in love with the theater, and the board of directors search committee were so kind. But I was happy with my little life.
Isn't it funny how that can happen? Because I've been falling in love with the theater.
Yeah.
One of my best friends was the first technical director at the Carolina Theater before its doors were open. It was only a cinema. The main stage hadn't been touched in God knows how many decades. And he was brought in. He was president of the union, but he was brought in to revamp it and be the TD. I was still working as an audiovisual engineer at Glaxo, but I was dreadfully bored. So I called him up when he was working there, and I said, hey, I says, any way you can get me out of this fix I'm in? I'm just, the money's good, but I am so bored. I need something different, and I'd love to understand what happens, you know, backstage in the arts. I've been on stage, mm-hmm. been a performer. You know, that's really the only thing I know about the arts. I'd love to see what they have to do backstage to put on one of my shows. So he basically said, well, you realize I'm the president of the union, and my obligation is to the union first. I said, no, I realize that, but I said, I can make you an offer that the union can't, and that is, I will do anything you need me for. If you need me to be a carpenter one day, pour cement the next day, do whatever it takes. I want to be part of this skeletal.
To see how it comes together.
Yeah, to
right.
see how it all comes together. And he goes, I'll get back to you the next day. He says, did you really mean that? And I said, whatever it takes. And so I've had my hands on every aspect of revamping that Carolina Theater up until the time the door opened. But
that's
the point
it.
I was trying to make is I don't really Durham's a beautiful place, but it's not really the sort of place I want to live. I like the country, so I've got to have the birds and the trees.
Right.
But it's funny how I walked into the Carolina Theater and saw that belly in there where the seats are and all that,
mm-hmm.
and it was like a sailor, you know, falling in love with a ship, and I wanted to be there because of that.
Right.
Where I was, where the Carolina Theater was, didn't matter.
Yes,
it was
exactly.
the place.
Exactly.
And I can see.
And that's exactly
that's
what happened
you felt.
To me.
Yeah.
I had a nice, wonderful, lucrative life.
mm-hmm.
And a place, I owned a place in New York. How rare is that?
Living out of a suitcase, as I recall, yes.
Yes, I was living out of a suitcase at the time. But I love touring, so because I love to travel.
Yeah, the gypsy.
So then I interviewed, went back to my lovely life on the road. The tour was in Baltimore the second time they called. And so I rented another car, drove down, and that's when I was hooked, because the Heart of Carolina Jazz Orchestra was playing on stage. We went to eat at the one of the best restaurants ever. Back then it was called Bella. Now it's called the Steel Pig. So they wined and dined me at Bella, which is now the Steel Pig. I heard the Heart of Carolina Jazz Orchestra playing on stage. It was a packed house. And just the energy. And I was like, if this can happen in this community where it means something. You know, I had been on the road doing Broadway shows, which you go in, you come into town in your bus caravan, and you stay in the hotel, and you walk down the street to the theater, and you have, you know, the masses come, and they pay their $100 a ticket, and they are greatly entertained, and then they go home.
Right.
But as an artist, it doesn't, you're a cog in the machine, you know, and if you go down, there's 15 people waiting in the wings to take your spot, you know, so, and I actually felt I felt the community, which I had never felt in New York, living there for 22 years and being part of the community.
You were moving too rapidly at the
right.
In those early
days. And even when you're doing a Broadway show, it's after a while you're punching a clock.
Yeah,
it's an artistic clock.
Right.
But you work 6 days a week. You have one day off. That day typically is spent, you know, doing all your errands and paying your bills and recuperating from the other 6 days of the week.
The romance quickly diminishes.
That's right. And you're part of a huge marketing machine, which is sort of what Broadway has become.
Yes, indeed. With all the touring Broadway shows like Phantom and so on.
That's right. And you're also playing to, you know, I call it preaching to the choir. You're entertaining people who have spent very good money to see you. So they are going to get their money's worth.
Oh, yes.
And they're going to enjoy it. And you're going to get a standing ovation unless you really, really stink.
Yeah.
Which you rarely get to that point with that $1 million, millions of dollars investment and really stink.
Yeah, no, I don't think
so.
But chance.
To be able to be in a community that it's the only game in town, and to be able to educate the youth and to be able to entertain and enlighten and make a difference to me was very appealing at that age. You know, had someone said that in my 20s and 30s, I probably would have said, no, I'm fine, thank you.
Yeah.
Making my lucrative money and being part of this elite club and blah, blah, blah. You know, in your 40s, I think things change. Priorities change. And I had done it.
You become a bit more grounded in a sense.
Right. And I had set out to do a Broadway show. Well, I had done six of them. And so, you know, you look for the next challenge and be careful what you wish for.
Oh, God.
But I tell people now, and because I am fortunate enough to be able to bring in friends who to direct and choreograph and design the sets and the lights. And they're like, why do you work this hard? You could work anywhere and work much less and make much more money.
No doubt.
And it's because I feel like this radio station, I feel like what we do fills a void that is rapidly diminishing in this world that we live in, and that it's so important. A place for discussion, a place to take a chance. A
human
place,
connection.
Yeah, and I'm not a church-going person anymore. And so this is my church. This is my way to bring the community
I've
together.
Always seen it as the true temple, pardon the... I mean, the fact that it's temple theater adds to it, but to me, theater has always been the temple.
Right, and I mean no disrespect to religions of any kind, but... You know, this brings people together. It's the same thing. We laugh together. We cry together. We rejoice together. We experience something together and hopefully discuss it afterwards. Whether it's a silly comedy or whether it's a deep, moving production or whether it's this big family event that we call Christmas Carol.
Right.
I feel it. I feel the energy there. And that's why I stay. And that's why I came. I didn't think the economy was going to crash the minute I got here, however. But, you know, you never know what life is going to bring. And the fact that we're still here and we've been able to do this major renovation and we are now, our youth programs are quintuple what they were when we started. And I've seen kids grow up. I've seen the kids that were 13, 14, 15 when I got here are now 19, 20, 21. You know, kids have gone off to college in theater. Kids have moved up through the ranks and are now doing lead roles at the Temple Theater.
That's the only thing in life that makes me feel older.
Well, watching but it also makes me feel great.
Oh, I know.
Because this is a way to pass on my good fortune and the stuff, you know, I've been fortunate enough to work with people like Hal Prince, with George Abbott, with Jerry Zaks, with Susan Stroman, with Jacob Toth, who's a Fosse, you know, protege.
Right.
To be able to pass that on to kids in Sanford, North Carolina is a pretty big gift.
And it speaks well for Sanford.
Right. Well, and it's fun. It's fun to see them get it.
Yeah.
It's fun to see kids.
Oh, I remember your struggle in the early days.
Oh, I know. You know, and the things that were missing when I got to the temple, I call it, were the misfit toys and volunteers.
Oh, no
doubt.
We're
still looking for many more volunteers. That has not quite come to fruition yet. Because it's hard. People think, oh, I'll volunteer at the theater and it'll be glamorous and I'll take tickets.
Oh, it's work.
No, I need people to sew and sweep. And
I started out by volunteering in theater.
And paint. Yeah. And, you know, nobody wants to do that. Do wigs. So if you're out there and you have, you know, some creative spark, but that you are willing to share, let me know.
And the beauty of doing that kind of work, too, having done it myself before, I sort of went backwards. I went from being the star on stage to suddenly finding out, okay, what does it take to do all this?
Right.
And it was like learning another profession, so I sunk myself into it for a decade or more. And
right. Well, that's exactly what I did as well.
Yeah, I'm sure, yeah.
Right. Started out as a performer and then decided, I want to see how this works.
The thing that volunteers need to know is it's the education backstage. It's the education from doing it that way that is what will enrich you. It's
that's
not
right.
The fact that you're going to help somebody do some work. There's a whole education going on back there that's nonstop. Every conversation, every interaction, what you're cleaning, what you're building, all has to do with what eventually goes on stage. So you're learning.
That's right.
You know, no matter how much or how little time you spend there.
That's right. And we now have a program. Because we're teaching classes at the community college in Sanford, at CCCC.
Ah, I didn't know
and
that.
And so, yes, so their students can get credit.
Who's
for
teaching?
Coming. Tom Dalton.
Ah, okay.
Our director of education.
Yes.
So they can get credit or not have to take their final exam if they come and do crew. And we had two young ladies
who
worked on the 39 Steps who I just saw again because they both came to Christmas Carol. And they're like, we're hooked now.
I bought the movie, by the way. Since I missed your show.
Excellent. Because they said that, you know, we had no idea how hard it was and how much goes on backstage for what we see on stage.
It's a whole world back there.
And so, you know, these two 20-year-old girls who will never go into theater, but they're like, we will come to see live theater now because we get it.
Yeah.
And we know the work that goes into it. And so, you know, it's stuff like that I didn't find in New York, you know. But I was pursuing a different path in New York as well. It was about my career.
So many times what goes on backstage ends up being even more fascinating than the show itself. You know, by the time you put and it's one of these days I'm going to do it. I've been saying it for years, but I've actually started sketching out a story. But to create a story of the dynamics that go on backstage between characters building a show, and then to end that story on the note of the show going up.
It's opening night.
Boom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we had literally six people working backstage and three people out front for the 39 Steps, which is a four-person show.
Whoa.
But it's all about props and set changes and
no
costume
doubt.
Changes and fog and lighting effects and sound effects. And so we had more people. We had basically 10 people working the technical end of the show to support four actors on stage.
I was a lead technician for Phantom of the Opera stage right at Memorial Auditorium. And you talk about I had 96 cues.
Yeah.
You talk about being constantly on the go. I mean, they could have filmed that just for choreography. And you know, it's funny. You said the kids were asking how much do you get paid and all that.
Right.
I did that to the guy that played Phantom. I was up on the drawbridge getting ready to fog the drawbridge for his scene. And we had about 5 minutes before I had to do that. And he was standing in the corner and says, what do they pay you? They paid him, he said, $500 a night at that time.
Right.
$500 a show. So
yeah,
it was interesting. So it's an easy question to slip out.
Exactly. Well, it is interesting. And I always – I did – Showboat for 3 years in New York and then ended up doing it in London. And you do make very good money. But what people don't realize is that for the shows that you work on for a year in rehearsals where you don't make such great money, that then last 3 weeks, because I've done those Broadway shows, unfortunately, as well, then you're unemployed. And literally being unemployed doesn't mean you then move into that same level job in a couple of months. That means you start over, basically.
Yeah.
Because you've gotten one great lead and one great job, it helps you. But there are also 500 other unemployed actors who have those same credentials. You know, I mean, the big joke is that, you know, there are Tony winners sitting around their apartments in New York going, why is this bimbo, pardon my use of bimbo.
It's okay.
From some movie who's never done a theatrical performance in her life doing a Broadway show when I'm sitting here with my Tony on my mantle unemployed, you know, so it's the freelance world, you know,
yes,
more than most. You can make a lot of money for a short period of time.
That's the thing.
That you hope might be a long period of time, but then it all goes away. So
yeah,
you kind of have to be a little squirrel and
there's lots
things
of
away
bimbo limbo in all that, too.
Exactly. But, you know, it's I support any artist who's willing to put themselves out there, whether it's in radio, in the, you know, writing creative arts and painting and being a potter and being a sculptor and being a theatrical person and doing movies, you know, all of that.
It's funny you bring that up, because people, when they look at my artistic background, go to my website and realize the many different things they do, they question whether or not I have any focus. It's all the same focus.
Right.
It's cooking, all the arts.
I mean, that's
exactly.
That's
the paintings, whatever you're doing. It's easy to second guess an artist, to think that, you know, they're not focused because of the many different things they do. But when you really look at it, they're all branches of the same tree.
That's right.
And that's really what people have to learn to appreciate. And really, it's more to be admired than to be criticized. But I think it's taken a long time for society as a whole to sort of appreciate the multifaceted aspects of many artists.
Right. Well, and I think, you know, we were talking about a little bit about media and how lives have changed because of our, you know, now everything's instant. You know, if kids ask a question about a play these days, my biggest response is Google it. Because everything literally is right there in their phone. You know, you don't have to really give that kind of information anymore. You know, when was the War of 1812? Well,
yes, right, exactly. Well, listen, we've got to wrap up in about 2 or 3 minutes. So give us any contact information, anything you want to put on the table about Temple Theater between now and the time we get off the air.
We do have a special event coming up, which is wonderful. It's the General Assembly Chorus, which is a 40-man barbershop quartet style, nationally award-winning. They're coming on December 18th. It's a Tuesday night. At 7 p.m., tickets are $20, and that really gets me in the holiday spirit. We are doing our winter fundraiser because, as you know, as a nonprofit, we rely on ticket sales and fundraisers.
Right.
And that one is going to be on January 19th. It's a Saturday. It's black tie, but we're going to have live entertainment and auction items and raffle items, and all the proceeds go to keep this wonderful gem alive in Sanford. And if you need any more information on the rest of our season, you can go to our website, which is brand new this year. I'm very proud of it, templeshows.com. Or if you are interested in tickets, you can call our box office, which is 919-774-4155. But we are bringing back Jason Petty. He's doing a brand new show. We are doing Forever Plaid. We're doing a wonderful play with a horrible title called The Smell of the Kill. And then we're ending this season with Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat.
Well,
so
I see that one.
There's a little something for everybody left in the remainder of our season.
No doubt.
And thank you again for having me back.
And you've been listening to Peggy Tappo, and there's not much reason for me to say much when she's on. And I don't know why we kept Rocco so silent. Rocco normally jumps in somewhere.
Shut up. That's why.
Peggy, it's always good to see you.
Thank you, Rocco. You too. Happy holidays to both of you.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays and Merry Christmas to everyone. Just want to announce that Rocco and I will not be doing shows for the remainder of December, mainly because things are going to be having us both out of town in separate directions. And right now the game plan is to be back here the first week in January. So I'm leaving. Any DJs listening, if you want my spot, just announce my underwriter, the Apex Arts Council, and have your say. Enjoy the holidays, folks. Thank you for listening. This is Claudio. Cheers.